Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 346. The Nerdist TV show is currently running, if you're listening to this in April of 2013. Our episode this Saturday is with Elijah Wood and Ben Schwartz, who was awesome on the podcast, and Camille Nanjiani is going to be on, so tune in. It comes on right after Orphan Black, which is right after Doctor Who, Saturday nights on BBC America. I think 10 p.m. is the Eastern Standard Time. And also, I'm going to be doing stand-up in a lot of places. Comedy Works in Denver, May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Then I'm coming to Portland, Helium in Portland, May, I think, 9th. And then going to London. Then going to D.C. and Baltimore. Anyway, go to nerdist.com/calendar to get tickets for all those. Oh, and the Moon Tower Festival. I'm performing in Austin, Texas for the Moon Tower Festival coming up next week. So that is also something to look into. Moon Tower Festival, Austin. And I would like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, audible.com. Visit audible.com/nerdist. Get a free audiobook download. Listen whenever, wherever you want. It's just like a podcast. Except there's a narrative arc and an exact structure and an ending, probably. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from, every genre. Audible's got you covered. That is audible.com/nerdist to get your free audiobook download. This episode of the podcast is my old comedy friend, Natasha Leggero. Not old as in she is old as in we've been friends for a really long time. We did a lot of open mics together in the early 2000s. In Los Angeles, and I had her on the Nerdist TV show. You know, you feel bad when it's been, when you've had a podcast for 3 years, and there are some of your friends where you're just like even there's a thing that happens where, like, a year goes by, and you're like, oh, there's a couple of people I haven't had on yet, and then you try to schedule them, and maybe it doesn't work out, and then 2 years go by, and then you're kind of embarrassed. But 3 years? Come on, Chris Hardwick, what are you doing? I know. But I finally had Natasha on, so I'm glad that she wasn't like, you had me before year three, but now go fuck yourself. She did not do that, as is evidenced by the fact that this is the Nerdist Podcast number 346 with Natasha Leggero.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You're taking piano lessons? Mm-hmm. Oh my god, I did that for a while, several years ago.
I have an amazing teacher.
Is it Michael Cassidy?
No. I've been learning for a year, but I know like 20 songs. Like, she taught me chords and then chord inversions and then tempos. Like, I just learned Bossa Nova this morning. So it's like, once you learn the chords and then the tempos, you can just do anything.
I don't know how to read music.
So you could play the Sex and the City soundtrack.
For Bossa Nova.
Maybe I don't have the music right. That might be more of a samba.
Boop, 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 boop.
Natasha Leggero, god damn it. It is a travesty that we've had a podcast for 3 years and this is your first appearance on it.
You know, I have to admit, or I have to say to you, that I had a podcast before you.
And I did your
podcast.
And you
came over and
you were
like,
Hour.
I should have a podcast. Well, yeah. I don't think you said it like that. But everyone who came over started a podcast the next week.
Can I tell you that...
I know I didn't invent the podcast.
No, but it was a fun experience, and you guys had the snowball mic,
yeah.
And you did it from your apartment, and then Natasha made dinner.
Oh, yeah.
And she made lasagna that was fucking awesome.
I remember you really liked the lasagna.
It was so good. The whole experience was fun.
That's my party piece. That's all I know how to make.
The lasagna.
I do make great lasagna. Nice. It's from the back of a box.
I don't care.
But I'm really good at following directions.
You just heat it up?
No. Nice. I mean, you make it from scratch. It's involved. I mean, my plan. I did that for like 3 months. I would have someone over every week and make them a lasagna.
I don't see any reason to, because it's that good, there is no reason to not do that.
I'm really happy with the smart water you gave me here.
You're going to, is it going
to? Don't give him the credit. I'm the one that gave
Jonah
it to you.
Jonah gave it to me. That's true.
Thanks.
Well, but. No, yeah, I was trying to find a way to justify taking credit for that.
I bought it myself.
There's no way, Jonah.
And it was going to be for me, but I said, you know what? Natasha wants water. I'll give it to her. That's a good friend.
I no longer make lasagna or have a podcast.
What?
So I'm happy to be on yours.
I missed out on both of those things.
Sorry.
Did the podcast go in the breakup?
Yeah, Duncan got the podcast.
You got the dog.
Very modern. Dog, yeah. I got both dogs. Yeah. Very modern relationship.
Yes. He separated the podcast.
I got the trivia team.
I got the Twitter account. He got the podcast. Like, you're separating all of your digital properties.
I got
Blair's.
In our parents' generation would have to separate.
Children.
Would have to separate real property. This generation has to separate intellectual property.
It was interesting. Yes.
We gotta figure out how to break up our IP.
What about that bit we would always do in the morning? Well, you can have that. The brushing the teeth. No, yeah, you can have that.
Okay.
You can take that to your next relationship.
Now, your comedy voices were so... I mean, you've dated a couple comics that I know.
I like funny people.
But...
The movie or the actual...
But the...
Only actual people.
But is it... You know, I've dated... I guess I've dated comedians before, but there's that moment where you're riffing and then you both kind of look at each other and like... Is that going to be yours or is that going to be mine? Did you have those moments or were your voices different enough?
We had something called... Hold on. I wrote it down. I'm sorry. I just learned what this was yesterday. It's worth talking about.
Okay.
Let me pull out my stand-up notes with the gum on it. It's called...
Literally, that is the most tattered sheet of paper.
Oh, intersubjectivity. Do you know what that is?
I do not know what intersubjectivity
where, like,
is.
It's where, you inspire each other and, like, you know, you kind of come up with things based on the other person. Like, it was weird. It was like, I don't know. I just feel like...
Like being each other's muses?
Well, it was a very... Yeah, it was like very... It wasn't like competing bits. It was more like...
Contribution.
Yeah, like I would inspire him and he would inspire me. Like, we actually, like... Yeah, we wrote it. We wrote things together and we wrote a movie together. And,
that's right.
But it was like... It was cool to be in that kind of situation that was like... You know, I would think of something funny and then he would make it funnier and then he would think of something funny and I would make it funnier. Like, it felt more like that.
Were you a nerdy girl who went kind of glammy or were you always sort of...
Oh, honey.
Come on.
I was never a nerd.
But you've dated... All the guys I know you've dated are like nerdy comics.
Well, I mean, that doesn't mean... I like people who are smart and funny. And my dad's like kind of a Guido, so I go like the opposite. So I need to be around like a funny Jew usually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to kind of like make me feel like it's going to be okay.
Yeah. I think that is the diametrical opposite to a Guido as a funny Jew. Yeah. I think they're right across from each other on the
Don't
on
they
the
say that you end up settling with, not settling, but like getting together with your, you know, like if you're a guy, you get together with your mom, a version of it.
Oh, God, that's not where I thought you were going. I think what happens is...
Mom's cute, Chris.
My mom's adorable.
Your mom's great.
I've met your mom a few times.
She's feisty adorable. Italian.
Feisty Italian lady. I think, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if it's that or, you know, I think opposites can attract, but then I think opposites attract for a short period of time. And then at a certain point.
Well, I think people are always changing. And I think that, I mean, I'm probably, I don't know what you exactly consider a nerd. I mean,
I just mean like nerd, like
people who are intelligent, who are into something. Like, am I like, I guess I'm a glamour nerd.
Duncan's a pretty nerdy guy.
Duncan?
Yeah.
Is that, I don't know.
He's a metaphysical nerd.
He's also like a very free thinker.
He's a super smart guy.
And I'm attracted to people with very open minds.
Yeah, he's kind of a Wayne Coyne type.
Super, super, super smart guy.
Yeah, so I like being around smart people. I mean, do I want someone who has a action figure collection? Probably not.
Okay.
Sorry. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, this podcast was a ruse for all three of us to try to go on a date with you.
Do you have one?
No.
I don't think you're trying to go on. I'm just talking to, you know, people in general.
Oh, you're talking about
the dummies listening. All right.
I mean, are there listeners to this podcast?
No.
There's a couple. 100,000.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Jesus
like...
Christ.
What did he say?
That was a mumble brag.
What did he say?
Straight
a
up.
A mumble brag. Yeah. Did he say several million?
Yeah, he's like, just a couple. 100,000.
Oh, 100,000. That's good.
Mumble brag.
I have to go over to that.
Yeah. Mumble brag is good.
I like no, mumble thanks. Brag a
I think
lot.
You could get a book deal on that, like, maybe
so
by
too.
Tomorrow.
I don't think Harris Whittles would mind.
I'll do the first parody book of Mumble Brag. Yeah, it'll be right next to it. Brag. Urban Outfitters.
That book was funny.
A parody of an already existing comedy thing.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, it's funny, Natasha Leggero, because I've known you for a very long time, but I really don't feel like I know you very well.
I feel like you really inspired my comedy a little bit.
How did I do that?
Well, because you were like already established when I started, and I liked how you like talked about culture. You know, I thought it was. I liked how you would make fun of culture.
Oh, that's sweet.
And
that's...
I feel like the first time I saw you, well, the first time I saw you, you can cut this out if you want.
I probably won't.
But I had just started comedy. I was just started thinking. I was in LA, and I was like, I think I want to do comedy. And I remember watching TV one night. And this show Shipmates came on.
I don't remember it.
And I was like, who is this guy making fun of this show? I thought it was so funny that a host was just like, because they'd cut to this girl and she'd be like, what was one of the things? Oh, give me back my weave. What? I paid for it. No, give me back my weave. I paid for it. And it was just this inane like fight on a ship. And they would cut to you and you'd be like, okay, we'll be right back with this stimulating. Like, I was just like, how can you be making fun of a show you're on? I thought that was so hilarious. Then I saw you with Zach Galifianakis on that game show at M-Bar.
Oh, Joke Machine.
Joke Machine. I was like, that's that guy. He was so funny. And
oh,
I was like,
nice.
And I thought it was funny you were on that show just making fun of it. And then I started seeing your comedy. And I liked how you talked about relationships, but you also had like a sort of cynical view of society that I was kind of into as well.
That's really interesting to hear that, because those joke machines were so much fucking fun, and we did those for years.
Yeah, I remember one time someone said something about like all the money you had or something, and you were like, yeah, I'm gonna fuck a pile of $100 bills.
Oh yeah, I remember that joke. Here's the thing. Here's the thing I remember about that joke.
By the way, this is like 10 years. This is a long time.
A long
here's
time
the thing I remember about that specific joke, and it's rare. And when I explain why I remember it, it'll be clear why I remember that joke. It was I'm pretty sure those were back in the days when I was still drinking pretty
you
heavily.
Were. You were. Well, I just remember you look like 20 years younger now.
Sweet.
But you definitely were drinking. I remember that.
Okay, so. You know, near the end, the brain was getting a little fuzzy. So I remember that joke, and it was something like, I'll make $100 bills. I'll make a vagina out of $100 bills.
Yes,
and
that's
fuck
what
it was something like.
Holy shit. Gene Simmons is walking by.
Oh, he sure is.
Or is that just a zombie?
No.
Would he come in here? No.
Would Gene
not.
Simmons come in here?
He probably wouldn't unless we paid him.
I don't know. Yeah. I just became pals with his son Nick, and Nick is fucking awesome.
Who?
Nick Simmons.
Who's Nick Simmons?
His son.
Oh.
Who's a super incredibly smart, funny, awesome guy.
Why don't you go hang out with him then?
Gene just, you know what? Maybe I will. This podcast needs a new Jonah.
Jonah's killing it.
He is killing it.
And he got
smart water. Gene Simmons literally just kind of shuffled by.
Yeah.
He was full on shuffling.
So
that was a slow.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck anymore.
That's a guy waiting for people to see him.
Oh,
and
is
just
that
giving,
what that
giving
was?
Him a chance to see who it is.
I don't think
like,
so.
Like, you know, a bad background extra that does like kind of a stilted walk in the background so they stay in the shot longer.
Yeah, it seemed more like a septuagenarian with a bad dye job. Who
I like Gene
for his walker.
If you want to be more spot on, sure. Yeah.
I really like Gene.
I know.
He's a nice guy.
Should be nice.
He's a nice guy.
So you were fucking a vagina of $100 bills, $1,000 bills,
paper mache.
I.
Anyway, you've been rich for a long time.
No.
We get it. I have a question. Can I ask you a question? You always have the best clothes on. Like, do you just buy new clothes every day? Like, do you ever repeat a a shirt?
Oh my God, I'm constantly.
Oh, okay. Because it looks like you always have on a brand new shirt. And I was like, maybe that's a way to do it, just buy like 10.
No.
And then never wash them and just like give them to your cleaning lady to clean the floors with or something. That would be a power trip. That would be cool.
Yeah. So this $100 bills thing. Well, it just happens that I'm working on, and I work enough now that I constantly have wardrobe. Like, there's always new wardrobe.
Oh, I see.
Stuff. So, but anyway, so I made this joke about someone made a joke about a shitty show that I worked on. I was like, oh fuck, a vagina on $100 bills, and I got a laugh. And then I guess maybe a month or two later, we were doing Joke Machine and Howard Kramer was on, and he took some sort of shot at me, and I was like, I'll fuck a vagina $100 bills. He goes, I really liked that joke when you did it at the last show. And I was like, oh shit, I did.
That's not fair.
But you know what though? He was right.
Right. You're not allowed to repeat jokes?
You know, because the spirit of Joke Machine was sort of like a little roasty and riffy, and so, you know, it was well within his right to go there for the shot that while we were sort of riffing back and forth that I would repeat something that I had said on one of the last shows.
Right.
So, and it, you know, like that was a period where the brain's getting a little fuzzy.
You're allowed to use this stuff in your bag.
Yeah, well, he called me out on it. Mm. But it was those Joke Machines, like, everyone did those. Louie and Patton and Proops and Sarah and you and...
I actually never did one.
You never did a Joke Machine?
No!
I can't believe... Oh, maybe we stopped doing them before you...
Look at these chicks.
Maybe we stopped doing it before before you were started doing stand-up.
Yeah, I mean, I was still probably doing, like, open mics or something. But I did love them, and I would sit in the audience, and I thought they were so funny. I remember, like, Zach just, like, reading a porn once, like, just on stage.
Yeah, I remember, like, Matt Besser and Louie were on the same one, and Matt was doing a character, and every time it was up to, like, Louie to, like, you know, like, slam him, he's like, why am I going to slam him? It's a fake person. It would just be so dumb. It would be a non-thing. Why would I do that? And then Matt ended up winning that fucking show.
That's really those fun. Were cool. I mean, I like when stand-up shows are a little more not stand-up.
I think one of my favorite slams was Nick Swardson to Zach Galifianakis, where he goes, hey, Zach, if you break your ankle and have to go to the hospital, do they give you a piano to walk around on?
Oh, right. I remember that, and I didn't get it because I was like, his piano's so amazing. And then someone's like, no, it's a crutch. And I was like, still Zach doesn't do his piano anymore. I thought it was, I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's such a great addition.
We almost did that show at Comedy Central in like 2003.
Why don't you pitch that as a TV show?
I don't know if it would work anymore. I mean,
Is it your show?
No, I didn't come up with the show. The show was invented by Greg Lobb and Paul Hopkins and Tom Sharp all worked on it together, and Tom Sharp was the announcer. And
I feel like I did one recently at Meltdown, a new one.
They did. They started doing it at Meltdown, yeah.
That's right.
And so they brought me on to host it, and then I ended up helping a little bit with the structure of the game, but it really was, you know, it really was their show. And but I took it with them to Comedy Central in 2003, I think, and Comedy Central was gonna pilot it, and then at the last minute...
Then they crashed it.
At the last minute, they decided not to do it, so we just ended up not doing it. But it was a really fun show. I loved Joke Machine.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, those were the days.
They sure were. Now here we are, 10 years older.
Did you see the Beyonce doc?
Not yet. Got a DVR'd.
You know what's funny to me is that I read... It said... Beyonce's documentary smashes HBO ratings records. And I went to that page. I'm like, oh my God, I want, what, like 10, 12 million people? 1.8 smashes HBO's documentary numbers.
Oh, I kind of figured it was more of a, like,
well, HBO documentaries can be, you know, a little obscure.
Previous record holder was
Cat Dancers.
Cat Dancers.
Did you ever see that? That was amazing.
That was a real one?
Oh my God, it was so great. It was about these lion tamers who were like the poor man's version of Sigmund, or what's her name?
Sigmund and Freud.
Sigmund
and Freud is just one guy's name that you divided up.
Yep, that's really what it is.
No, Chris Cat and Dancers was like Reno's Siegfried and Roy, and they had a bunch of lions they lived with, and they ended up like eating them. It's like the best documentary I've ever seen.
They ate the lions, or the lions ate them?
The lions like ate one, and like they were like this couple who also lived with a boy, and they were all three like lovers.
Oh.
And then they had like lions living with them, and then they would brush their teeth and sleep with them, and then like one day it like ate the lover, like it ate the little boy.
Jealous? Because they were jealous?
Huh?
It was jealous?
It was weird. But anyway, the point is, their docs can be very obscure. Yeah.
Well, I love that.
But I thought it was.
I love that such
special.
A grisly tale was called Cat Dancing. Yeah. This is adorable. Let's get the whole family around. Kids, you love cats.
Cat dancing.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Homosexuality and the animals.
But they
eating
were
each
very
other.
Cheesy looking and very 70s, like, you know, Siegfried and Roy. So I mean,
sure.
But anyway, the Beyonce doc. What's really funny about it is they're so rich that like most of the documentary, it's like it's either. They're in the air or on sea. Like, they're never on land. Like, they're always in a boat or in a private plane.
If I was rich enough not to have to deal with the ground, I'd do it. I'm so over this thing beneath my feet.
You would basically have an aerial bathroom that you just have to go up and take a shit over.
Yeah, just nothing.
Over the city.
I would get some hover shoes.
Yep.
I'd be just done.
Yeah, because when you think about how much money Jay-Z has, just Jay-Z... And then you think about Beyonce, and then you combine those elements together.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Because I was looking at her making a toast, because, you know, she's had... Here's what's weird about Beyonce, because, I mean, I'm just... It's on my brain, because everyone's so into her, and I just don't see it. I don't know. I just feel like she's, like, successful Britney Spears. Like, she's, like, a made person who has, like, a crazy work ethic, who's just, like, has all these handlers, and... I mean, she's definitely charismatic, but, like, I just don't see that she's, like, our Beatles. Like, I don't...
No.
And that's what I feel like a lot of people are... coming at me with, so that's why I'm like studying her. But she's got this, like, she has cameras following her around like for the past like 15 years, and she, like, every night she does her, after she does her show, she goes home, watches the video. This is cameras in addition to like just following around her life. She watches the video, and then the next morning she has notes for like lighting, hair,
whoa,
everybody, and she like gives like 2 hours worth of notes. And so like it ends up being an extremely strategized and, you know, a manipulated performance night after night. You know, like, you know, she's always doing those air kisses, and, you know, it's just like, I just find her like kind of cheesy for like being like the voice of like everyone's obsession, like the only performance at the inauguration, the football, the Grammys, the Oscars, the documentary. It's just kind of like,
you're just kind of over it.
Beyonce it out, man.
Yeah.
But I just, because a lot of my friends like her, I just kind of got, but anyway, the point is, you see her talking in this kitchen. I'm like, that can't be her kitchen. But then it's like, oh, that's her yacht's kitchen. Because it's like low ceiling. Yeah.
Well, the yacht has
from
a smaller
being a horrible
yacht
kitchen
in it.
To the most amazing kitchen instantly.
So when did you start doing stand-up? Was it around 2003, 2004? And why did you, like, what was it that made you want to do stand-up?
You, no.
It was definitely not me.
The money.
No, I came here from New York. I was an actress as a child, and then not a star, just an actress. Like, I was in plays. You know, like, I was obsessed with, like, I wanted to be an actress, and then I moved to New York and went to acting school and then got my regular degree. And then I moved here, and I just thought, like, oh, people are just so stupid in L.A. Like, I just was kind of, like, having a reaction, and I hated it. And then I just saw this girl I knew who's not even a comedian anymore, and she was just up on stage at the Comedy Store talking about, like, New York and people here. And I was working at this waitressing bar, like, this bar that people were just so dumb, and the whiskey bar. And I just had to, like, deal with all these L.A. girls. And then I just saw this girl talking, and I was like, oh, you can just, like, comment on society. Like, I didn't know what a comedian was. Like, I wasn't, like, I'm so glad, too. I got so lucky, because if I would have seen people, like, especially women who are funny, like, if I would have seen, like, Sarah Silverman or Mary Lynn Rice, I would have been like, oh, I can't do this. You know, but, like, I didn't see anybody. I didn't know. And so I was like, oh, you can just get up there and just, like, blab.
Yeah.
And so I just tried it once, and it was, like, it was still the best show I've ever had. Granted, I was on an Ambien, and I had a glass of wine, but I just remember feeling
how
like...
How were you standing?
Well, I had, like, half an Ambien that my hairdresser gave me. I was very nervous. It was at the Comedy Store, but I just didn't...
But Ambien's not to relax. That's to put you out.
Oh, it is? I don't know. I was so nervous. I just needed something. I must have been a small dosage. But I do remember, this way I think it was the best show I've ever had. It was like, when people laughed, I was not expecting it. And so it was like, it was like a visceral feeling of like waves. Like, all I can describe it as is like waves of an ocean. Like, I don't know. It was an out of body experience, and so then I was like, "Oh, well, I gotta do that again." And of course, my next show was like god awful.
Yeah, it's usually
the worst. Then it was just like, I remember going home and being like, "Okay, this is gonna be."
You have one amazing show, and you're like, "This is comedy."
I know.
Oh,
how about those people who like open for you, and they're like, "Yeah, I do like, you know, I usually like to do like 2.5 hours." I'm like, "How do you are you doing 2 hours?
My favorite is someone's like, I've been thinking about doing stand-up comedy. I have about half an hour's worth of material. I was like, that'll be 5 minutes when you're on stage.
It took me, I'd say, to be able to feature, to do a half an hour, it took me like 6 years.
It takes a long time.
It took me a really long time.
But I remember seeing you at the Bruco. I think that's where I first started meeting you. It was at the Westwood Brewing Company.
Yeah.
The Vance's open mic.
Yeah. No, I started working really hard. And that's what was cool about, I think I was dating a comedian at the time, and like he was like, had a crazy work ethic. And I remember he had this thing hanging up in his wall, and it said, you're not good until you bomb 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, and then he had like, he crossed it out, and he only had like 10 crossed out. And I was like, he's going to try to bomb 90 more times. But it was like cool to think like, oh, you got to like real, like it's about bombing and it's about fucking up. And
I remember that about you, like right when I like met you in the comedy scene, like you were just, and like I remember for a time, like you had like your car was broken down or something, and you were just catching the bus to all these open mics.
That is so embarrassing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I got a car now.
Yeah, this was a long time ago.
Do you? Yeah, of course you do.
But I remember like you were just like you would have all these like it's like I got here on the bus and be like, wow, I am so lazy. I remember I always felt so lazy compared to you.
My car got one time a cop pulled me over. I was on my way to a show, and he took away my car. And just left me at the bus stop with like a stack of headshots. Like I was like, can I take my headshots? So I remember I was on the corner of Vermont. Because I had a shitty car and it kept like, you know how if you do, I spent so much time at the DMV for my first 3 years in LA. I had to wait in line every month to get one of those stickers. Because you know when people have a sticker that's like 1, 2, 3, you're like, that means that it's the police can't technically pull you over for no registration until the first of that month. So, like, I would, like, go to the DMV and be like, can I please get till April? So sometimes I would get, like a two-month thing. But anyway, why did he pull me? Oh, because my car didn't have... I had this whole scam running. Like, it couldn't be... It wasn't registered, but I didn't have insurance. But I couldn't get the insurance till it was registered and passed the smog test. So, you know, it was a whole thing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But that's...
But you were great. You were dedicated.
I was dedicated.
That's why I brought it up.
Well, I had... I mean, what else was I going to do? Yeah, I needed to get a car.
But that's what's so... But
that's what drove you in your early days of comedy. God, I need a car. I guess I got to go check out these open mics.
But that's what's so... I think that's what's so fun and interesting is that, you know, your presentation is this... You know, even in what I perceive to be the presentation of your stand-up persona is a character who's very well put together on the outside, but not on the inside.
Oh, interesting. That's how you see my character?
I think so, yeah. Of like the character that's sort of like above everything, but way, you know, but kind of a little fucked up inside.
Right, like incapable of love.
Yeah, that's just, I think there's just, there's...
That's the character?
Shut up. I do love my dogs. I cannot tell a lie. No, I think that, that's interesting. I mean, I think it changes. That's what's cool. Like, your comedy's different than it was when I first, first saw you.
I still, unfortunately, would say something like, fuck a vagina made out of $100 bills, but I guess, but I think it's
the name of your next special.
Why not?
Yeah.
$100 vajays.
I think that it changes, right? Because whole thing
it
used to be, like, I wanted to be glamorous, and I saw myself as this glamorous entity that was just, like, gonna, you know, take over my surroundings at all times. But then I had, like, you know, I was taking the bus. But I would still try to keep up those appearances, you know. But, and I did, for a while it was hard, like, once you start getting some money, you're like, oh, am I gonna lose my... Because I do feel like you're funnier sometimes. I was funnier when I had, like, $9 in my account.
Yeah.
Because it kind of drives you a little more. I mean, you just have to find out the new targets and the new... That's why the comedy's shifting, because you're changing.
Sure. And I think it's important to let that happen that you can... Because you don't want to be doing the same stuff you were doing 10 years ago. So it's totally...
No, and people... And also people, like, even though I'm not rich, like, if I talk about, like, taking a bus in Detroit, people are like, but you're a celebrity, you know, because they see you on E. So they're like, oh, you know, so it's like you have to kind of be true to.
Was it I'm interested to know what the experience was like for a female comic, particularly one who it's like, you know, your outward persona is very glamorous. and you're navigating like the Comedy Store, and you're navigating open mics and comedians, and you know, you must have.
It definitely gave me a lot of material.
You must have had this conversation a million times. I'm not going to go out with you.
I mean, that's not true, because I feel like guys are afraid to ask female comedians out. They yeah. really are. First of all, they think automatically that you're going to be talking about how big their dick is on stage. I mean, I think that goes through everybody's head. Like, they just.
I would love yeah. for someone to talk about how big my dick is on stage.
I mean, I think everyone just thinks immediately you're going to be like roasting them in front of everybody.
Oh,
it's like
you
a
mean
public
the other
humiliation,
way.
You know? People didn't really ask me out.
I never wanted to. I never like not
you never
not,
asked me
not
out,
you.
Jonah.
No, not you, but like I never wanted
You're too
to,
tall for me.
I am. It would just be weird. Everyone would laugh. But it was just I never wanted to ask anyone out in the comedy scene, because I would always be like, it's gonna go bad, and then I'm just gonna have to keep on seeing them at every night of the week at all these different shows. Especially in the early days when everyone's going to the same shows and open mics, and now there's more shows in LA, but early on.
Is there a group like when we were all doing that? Like, is there a group doing that now, and where are they?
They're at Meltdown. They're at Meltdown, UCB, Tiger Lily. Is it still?
That's why
you know,
it's
I
nice
started
there.
Tiger Lily.
You did, yeah. When it yep. was on, when it was called Tiger, well, the restaurant was called Tiger Lily.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
On Vermont.
Yeah.
And then
fun.
That restaurant changed names like five times, and then it moved to yeah. It wasn't you and Melinda, right?
And Maria.
Bamford.
And Maria. And you know what's interesting about that place is when we started doing our show there. I guess that's where. Before, that's where Tenacious D was doing their stuff before they got big.
Oh, really?
When it was like in a different...
It was the Hollywood Hills Cafe, I think.
But there used to be a stage there before it was that cafe.
Oh, wow.
And so I thought it was... It's always cool when there's, like, energy for comedy. That's why I like the Comedy Store. I just like being at a place that's been... That comedians have been performing
at. Place scares
at.
The shit out of me.
The Comedy Store?
Yeah, because it's such a, you know... The Comedy Store is a very specific type of environment, and I feel like one that...
Lawless.
Well, it is a bit lawless.
I've had a drink thrown in my face by another comic there.
And, whoa. And so, first of all, I want to hear about that. Okay, we're not going to talk about that story. But but the Comedy Store, I feel like, is such a trek to Mordor. Like, it can have one of two effects on people. It either makes you... a bulletproof comedian, because if you can survive at the Comedy Store, there's really not much else that could be thrown at you that you wouldn't be able to handle. Or it just sends you down this path of just bitterness and rage.
Is that what it did to you?
I didn't really do it that often. I mean, I did it, you know.
You don't do it ever?
No, I haven't done the Comedy Store in years.
Interesting.
Because it's
tourists in the crowd.
It is.
It's not like it's a hip crowd in any way, but somehow they're like, they're not, you know, like an alternative room or a room like Meltdown, they're kind of, or UCB, they're into like the punchlines, the references. Comedy Store is more about like your energy as a funny person. Like, they're not going to get like your really hip reference. In fact, they probably won't.
Right.
But a lot of times it's about like that, and it's great for crowd work. And
yeah there's no question. I think early on, I mean, I used to do the belly room. When I first started out, actually, I think my first show when I officially said I am going to start doing stand-up in 1998 was at the belly room.
That's where I started.
I like that room a lot.
A woman named Bobby Shropshire was running the show.
You know, just really quickly, you know that room is why it's called the Belly Room. It was like Mitzi made it for women.
Yeah.
She thought it would be a safe place for like women to do comedy, like a womb.
Oh, I didn't
it's so
realize
weird
that.
Because it's also like there's like an outside entrance around the back. Like, it's just like, just don't come in the front door. Go around back. No ye women here.
Yeah,
it is a good, very supportive, nurturing type room.
Each of the performance spaces at the Comedy Store has its own personality, and the Belly Room can be a very warm room, I think, because it's so intimate. And the OR, the original room, is very, that's where it feels like
that
a fucking
hard.
Battlefield.
Yeah,
and
that
then,
was weird.
And then the main room, if it's full, can be amazing. But that's where, you know, that's where Richard Pryor and all these, and Kinison, and, you know, and the inside of the Comedy Store hasn't really changed since those days either. So
that's what I love about it. Like, there's actual, like, mirrored piano tables all backstage that they used to do coke off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and
they're
and,
still there, these, like, tables.
And they're all scratched up.
And I think that's sort of, I think that's what I see about your kind of dichotomous nature is this glamorous presentation, but you like really dirty things in a weird sort of way. Like there's sort of a, I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it other than that.
I'm just cool, man.
This is fucking killing it.
Wait, you know at the Comedy Store, though, I have to tell you this. You have to bring people up. So sure. That's another aspect of it. Like a lot of times it's not a host. And I was there recently and I had to go up after Martin Lawrence. And he is like doing like, you know, he is a master at like dry pussy, wet pussy, any kind of pussy jokes you can think of. He was killing. And they're like, okay, who's next? And they're like, Natasha Leggero. And he's like, what? They're like, Natasha Leggero. He's like, well, I'm black. I can't say that shit. And I go, just say Natasha Martin. And he goes, bitch, I don't work for you.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, am I not allowed to swear on this?
No, you can say whatever you want. Okay. Swear all you want.
And so he like was really rude. And then he waited for me in the parking lot. That's what I mean. It's like a lawless environment. Like you just kind of feel like
it's like Deadwood.
And he's like, Natasha. And I was like, yeah, Martin. He's like, how long you been doing comedy? And I was like, I don't know, 10 years? He's like, I've been doing it for 20, and I don't work for you. And I go, Martin, I was just telling you what my name was.
Jeez.
And he's sweating. I don't know. Maybe something's wrong with him. But then I asked him to hold my purse.
He seems.
Did he?
Yeah. I mean, then he laughed. But it was just like, so you get like that element of like insanity I kind of like.
I know, but that's.
That's not happening at the Laugh Factory.
No, but that's the kind of, I like a comedy environment, and maybe this makes me a not as good a comic, but I like friendly, nurturing environments. I just do. And so the idea that someone would be like, I'd be like, I don't fucking have energy for this shit. I don't want to be here. This isn't fun. You know, like I want comedy to be fun. And so I just don't know if I would, I still feel like I should go just do it because.
Well, the way it was best described to me is like when basketball players, I don't really know anything about basketball, but apparently when they're.
You're in the right place.
Well, when they're practicing, they put a little thing on the hoop to make it harder.
Oh, sure.
Put the ball in. It's kind of like that.
Right.
Yeah. So then if you can get good at that.
Yeah. That's what I was saying before. Like it's performing in ankle weights or it's like it's just like you're it's strengthening your armor, which is good. I mean, I think, you know, for a large part of your comedy career, I think that's you need that. But then at a certain point, I think you just don't need that anymore.
You're right. Sometimes I still act like I just am just starting, and I'll just keep going up.
No, you're really funny. Like, you've been doing comedy for a long time. You've kind of started to figure it out.
I know. Sometimes you just like it's hard to get out of your old habits of just like, why are you doing that? Like, why are you going?
Why are you
up
torturing
in
yourself?
Anaheim? You just have to get out of that work ethic. Enjoy life. Get the hot tub. Relax.
Did you get a hot tub?
I'm getting one, yeah.
But you ask about the hot tub.
No, I'm obsessed with her.
Well, do you want a hot tub?
No, I don't think we can fit one in, but your place is perfect for one. Yeah. I remember saying that to Dee when I was like, put a hot tub right there. It'd be really nice.
Yeah, man, it's coming.
Yeah. It's a nice place. She can design the shit out of a house.
Oh, you never been over?
No.
I got a nice house.
I just got a house. I need help. There's nothing in it yet.
You should talk to her.
I was thinking I should help design. I should help design interiors.
Make it a show on TLC.
I'll do that when I'm 60. Oh yeah, I guess I could do that too.
There's not going to be a TLC when you're 60. There's not going to be
that's
television.
That's going to be the only channel.
Yeah, it's because it's just going to be just small people and people with two heads.
You don't think there's going to be television?
Not in 25 years.
I saw your interview.
There'll be something. I don't think it'll be television the way that we are what.
There goes my dream of being a TV star.
I think there will be entertainment. I just don't think it'll necessarily be traditional television.
What were you saying? I saw the Stephen King, what's his name? Larry King. That Larry King thing where you were like, there's like one little piece that's missing.
Yeah.
It's like a.
It's the delivery system is missing.
So it's like once we get that cord, everything's going to. Be connected.
It's basically the viable platform doesn't exist yet, which allows non-early adopters the ability to easily jump back and forth between. I mean, if you're under 25, you probably watch a lot of stuff on Xbox or Hulu or
Apple TV
or Roku or you know. But
I would say if you're under 40, you do that. I mean. I think
a lot of people under 40 do, but again, you know, America's a very large country, and a surprising number of people are not as hip to technology as we think they are, and so, you know, but this generation that's 25 and under now is, and so in 25 years, like they're, this whole generation of people is growing up consuming content not in the way that we did when we were growing up. And so that's why I think when their generation sort of becomes the dominant, when they get to their prime, they're not gonna, like, why would they go back and start watching television if they haven't for the first, you know, 15 years of their life? Or, you know, it's just, it's gonna happen. And so the delivery system, much in the way that iTunes kind of made podcasting mainstream because they made it very easy for people to get podcasts, used to be really
and
tough.
And it's free.
It's free. So when a delivery system exists in place that is like, you know, one cable comes, theoretically, I don't know if this is how it would be delivered, but one cable comes into your house instead of cable and internet, and it's just your entertainment source, then, you know, television networks become apps, and your television is some form of OS, which it already kind of is.
What's the operating system?
Like, you don't go, I'm going to go to channel 398.
Sorry, I'm just trying. No, I'm very interested in this topic and in what's happening, but I just don't know all the lingo.
No, I love just the,
But it's so insane to me when you go to, like, one of these multicam tapings that, like, this is still something.
They're still doing it.
It feels like this, like, dinosaur. It almost feels like, remember when TV started, they would just like take a play like Our Town and they would just have like two, like one camera and just record it. And that's what people would watch on their TV.
Yeah.
Like that's what it feels like. And then now I've been doing all these festivals, like, cause I'm in Burning Love. I don't know if you've seen this.
Which
it's
is great.
Be on
it's
E.
great.
But yeah, so it's what they're doing now, I'm sure you guys know this, but I just think it's so hip, is like, they're traveling to all these comedy festivals, all these new web series, and they're playing them for live audience, and they're really seeing what people are laughing at. And it's such a modern way to do the, what's the thing, you know, where they stand out in Vegas and pay people $30 to come watch your thing?
Oh, you mean to test a show?
Yes, the testing audience it's such a modern, cool way to be. It's so innovative. Like, that's where the future is. And they're still, like, testing multicams in Las Vegas to see what people are responding to.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just think it's such a cool time to be involved. And
yeah.
It's all really fun. I mean, it's interesting and a little unpredictable.
Well, yeah, it's changing. It's changing, like, all the time.
Well, you just don't know. It's very difficult to pinpoint what people are going to like. And because the delivery system is really important, because now a lot of digital media hinges on whether or not people share it, because there's not like a standardized platform like television that everyone is sort of forced to watch. They're basically just jumping video to video or one episode to one episode. They're not engaged in the way where it's like, let's sit down and flip channels and then just we'll stumble upon something.
Do people still do that?
I think probably more than you would think, because again, I think most of the country is a little bit more behind than we would assume. But a lot of people don't.
Like the House of Cards model, that's like the new thing. People want it all at once, and they want to watch it at their leisure.
And the House of Cards model was a risk.
Why can't we call it the Lilyhammer model?
Well, Lilyhammer, I think, was a show that they bought that they didn't produce.
Oh.
That Netflix did. I don't think Netflix produced Lilyhammer. I think they just bought it. But House of Cards, they produced. You know, and again, it's a testament to this idea that content is now rules. The content is king in our culture. That, you know, a show like because if House of Cards had been crappy, then obviously no one would have cared. But because it has Kevin Spacey and it's apparently really good, I haven't seen it yet, that, you know, everyone's talking about it and everyone's got to watch it. And, you know, you just sort of, we binge consume now.
I think they should have doled them out one by one, week after week. So, because I think a lot of TV watching that people are forgetting about online stuff is that it's a, you know, the culture of
you
like
want the conversation to go.
Yeah, exactly. Like seeing an episode of Breaking Bad, then talking to your friends about it, going, what do you think's going to happen? And it's like, oh, well, I know it's going to happen because I watched the rest of the season.
But the only problem with that is that people are like, I mean, I don't know if you guys realize this, but we don't have servants and people's lives are spinning out of control. Nobody has any time for anything. Like there's just no time. Like the people I know who have children, like, they don't, I mean, their one free moment is Saturday, and then they're, like, doing their laundry and buying their groceries. And it's like, in order to watch something, it's like, okay, Saturday night, we can knock this out. Like, it's people don't have the leisure anymore.
Yeah.
Just want to watch everything, and then life gets in the way.
Ugh.
But did you,
I was trying to get in the fact that we don't have servants is insane. But I guess I just let that slip by.
I did. I gave a disgusted ugh.
I'm talking Downton Abbey style, not Root style.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
But just the idea that we have to like
servants
you guys,
that are same color.
You mean the same color
as us? It's totally fine.
You mean hired servants versus indentured servitude?
Yes, I mean people who enjoy. Right. Bringing you, you know, checking the temperature of your bathwater.
I still don't know. If
I
want to
get a
serve.
I want to get a live-in servant for our 2-bedroom house and just
a live-in. Yeah. Well, you know, I heard that they're not that expensive.
It's like really? It's like in The Jerk when he's getting millions of dollars and the servants is like, you could afford proper quarters.
You can get a Russian live-in.
Jesus
for $500 a month.
A month?
Because you feed them and let them live with you.
So you're just paying to have a roommate.
They're going to feed me.
A roommate who brings you bedtime biscuits.
Shit.
Goes to Rite Aid for you.
Listen. I'm curious.
Fine, change the subject.
No, I'm not. It's just I want to talk about that.
We don't have to. It's a slippery slope.
It's a slippery comedy slope. But that's what I want to talk about with you and your comedy is that
double diamonds.
It's a slippery comedy slope. It's double diamonds.
Oh yeah, it was a ski reference.
It's a resort reference. I thought you would appreciate it.
I like double. I want to name my album Double Diamonds.
Double diamonds.
Yeah. I get double diamonds.
So here's the point that I want to make is that
I want to know
from your point of view what it's been like because a lot of comedy I think is an audience coming in and not being threatened by the comic on stage. If they feel threatened by the comic on stage, they're not going to be on board. So here you are, an attractive comic whose persona is kind of glam and making jokes about why can't we all have servants. And so if people, because I find that a lot of mainstream audiences will take what you say at face value. And so they'll say, like, she probably really means that, as opposed to kind of going along with the character and the bit. So have you found that?
First of all, I would like to clarify, I do think it would be nice to have servants.
Yeah. Why? Of course it would.
But the idea that, everyone used to have people, like, just, the fact that, like, a bachelor, well, I know you're engaged now, but, like, Jonah, all right, you're supposed to cook, do all your cleaning, do laundry, decorate your house, make all your meals. It's insane.
It's bullshit is what it is.
But, yes, yeah, so this your question what I'm talking about. Is... Your question
so how do you break down? Because
I think it's just something that instinctually either happens or doesn't. I mean, also I don't think I'm that I don't think people are that intimidated by me when I get on stage either because I'm 4'11". I mean, that's something you might want to consider.
Yep.
Also, I think that you know if you have like a you know I'm kind of silly on stage. I mean, it's like it's not like I'm real serious about all these issues. I would like a sermon, but I'm just telling you.
You do have
they're called assistants now.
Yes, live-in assistants.
I don't have a live-in.
You don't?
No.
You have an assistant?
No.
I'm so sorry. Your life must be so tough.
What is the actual question, though? Because I would like to give you a good answer for it.
Well, it's just the idea of like if...
You're asking me, like, how can you, like, dress nice and have the audience not hate you?
And also in the presentation of your material, which is, you know, some of it comes from this place of, you know...
elitism?
Yes, elitism, the sort of the put-upon upper class kind of like...
Right, but, I mean, look what's behind it. Someone who can't get their car registered. I mean, that's what was... That's why I created that persona, because I was so... tired of being like a poor person and just being around like people who had things. So it's like I like the idea of reinvention. And I think maybe people can sense that from me and they can also think like, oh, that is a possibility in life. Like you don't have to like your parents don't have to be like artists and, you know, captains of industry for you to like become something.
It'd be really great to have a captain of industry for a parent. Just a robber baron. Robber baron in the family.
I mean, doesn't Lady Gaga... Like, I think some people really do... Like, some people, you have to admit...
Beyonce.
Some people start... I think Beyonce's from, like, a poor...
You're talking about from
I'm saying some people start on, like, third base.
Right.
You can't deny that. I mean, that's why it takes some people so long. You know, I think that, like, for me... When I was 25, I was living in Australia with a con artist. Man. Like...
What?
Making him breakfast. Like, I had...
What?
Yeah.
You've had a few lives.
I'm just saying, like,
what is that about?
I just wanted to experience life, and I didn't have guidance, so I was just like, oh, I guess I'll go do this. I'm just saying, like, when you don't have, like, you know, ambitious or you know.
What was he conning Australians for?
Oh, I mean, he would do things like just steal potatoes from the grocery store. I mean, he was just like stealing things, and also
that's
like
just a
no,
thief,
no. He
a
but
thief,
he was like.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he said that he was like an intellectual property lawyer, but then he would get paid to do things. Like, he'd get paid to write a thing on tort law, but then he would just spend the money and we'd go on vacation.
Oh, that's great.
And I would be like, don't you have to write that thing? And he'd be like, shut up, Wiener. He called me Wiener. But anyway, I'm just saying.
The slight insights to that world is very fascinating.
I'm just saying, if my parents like were more savvy, I would have had more direction. But, you know, my dad was like, you want to be an actress? Oh, yeah, you should be Vanna White. So he was like, you could be the next Vanna White.
Was his version of an actress?
Yeah, like, I'm just, you know, like, I had to figure everything out, like, so slowly that, you know, by the time you get somewhere, it's like, you're kind of over it.
What were you like in high school?
In high school, I just like had like three cool friends and we were like the cool people in our group. But then I would get like beat up.
What? Who beat you up?
Black girls.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't like you.
Well, I mean, one of them was pregnant, I remember once, and she like threw a book at my head. And then we had to like go to the principal's office. And
I
remember standing up and I go, I just want to be able to walk around the halls, you know, and wear the shoes I want to wear. Because I was always wearing like crazy clothes. And I was like, I want to wear the shoes I want to wear without someone beating me up. And I remember Yolanda, this girl who was beating me up, her mom was in the meeting and my mom was in the meeting. And and Yolanda's mom goes, your shoes is ugly. So, I mean, that was kind of high school. But, I mean, I would always date, like, older guys, like, who lived in Chicago, like, musicians and stuff. So I was always, like, into music. I was never into I don't think comedy was really a thing, though, like, when I was in high school. Comedy's definitely more of a thing now than it has been. Like, I feel like don't you think, like, in the 90s, like, comedy was, like more for our parents and not so much kids?
Mainstream comedy died in the 90s. After the 80s comedy boom, and it went underground.
Right, then you have like the Janine Garofalo, San Francisco.
Yes. But
scene.
you wouldn't have been exposed to that.
I was not exposed to that.
Where you grew up in Chicago?
Rockford, Illinois.
Rockford, Illinois. Yeah, you wouldn't have been. I mean, Chicago obviously has a pretty rich comedy history, but it certainly, I don't think it would have been stand up at that time. If anything, it would have been like improv or sketch. Yeah. Second City.
But I wasn't in Chicago. I was in Rockford, Illinois. Yeah, like, I was doing? I was like going to see like Fugazi.
Okay.
Or like, yeah. I was like going to see like cool, like there was also like a really cool like music thing happening.
Is that when you met Chris Holmes?
Yes. That's how I knew Chris Holmes.
Yeah.
You know what I saw that was really cool is I remember someone took me to we drove into Chicago. I think I was in high school. I don't remember. I might have been in college. But then I remember someone took me to this band. They're like, you have to see this. And I was like, whatever. And I was sitting there and all of a sudden it was like, like Smells Like Teen Spirit, and it was like Nirvana had just come out, and I was just like, that was like one of the pivotal moments. I was like, this is the most amazing. It's cool when you can like see music like for the first time like that, where you're like, wow, this is gonna like change everything.
Yeah.
But I was more into music. But I think now they're more connected, and now I think the kind of people who would have been into music then are more into comedy, because also comedy kind of has the spirit more of what music had then. Because I feel like music's so overproduced now. And it can be, it's everyone's derivative. Like, I don't think Nirvana was like directly doing an impression of something retro that they were bringing back. Because even music that's good now is often like retro.
Yeah, most of like, as far as like rock music especially, it's like most of the stuff that breaks real big, if you even look at the Strokes, the White Stripes, Black Keys, all of it has been like really derivative of, you know, 70s, 60s rock.
Yeah, like, I mean, like I saw that band Alabama Shakes, like every single song was like, oh, that's a Wing song. Yeah, oh, that's you know, Aerosmith. Oh, that's Paul Simon. You know, like it's so derivative. Yeah.
There's only so many chords.
Yeah, but what sucks is like the thing that like sounds like nothing I'd heard before. Which kind of like, you know, when you hear like music that makes you feel kind of old because you don't get it yet, was like dubstep. When I heard dubstep for the first time, I was like, I don't get this.
Oh, I love that. But you probably don't like to dance.
I love dancing.
You do?
Yeah. I it's weird. I can't dance in a crowded area because I'm so big.
Aww.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer.
Ow! Yeah. This like broken, You just carve a path of destruction across the floor. I'm so like sorry.
Gulliver. Yes, Chris, that's exactly what it's like. Thank you for making light of it. It's making me feel like
you're
a
big
million
and
bucks.
Destructive.
Yeah.
So then you can't dance in open spaces.
Well,
where
like
you
know,
dance?
Like there's at the Echo. Like I'll go with Ed Salazar. Ed Salazar, our friend, really loves to dance. And like it's like a funk and soul night, you know.
Ooh, that sounds.
And that's
fun.
Like it's a lot of fun because like there's it's not a crazy pack. There's a lot of people dancing, but it's not crazy packed. So I have a place where I can have room. I always feel so sorry for Deanna too because I'm like, can we go off to the side so there's no one behind me?
The last time I went dancing was Halloween, and we went to this.
You danced on your birthday. I saw you.
Oh, I did. That's right. Yeah, I did dance on the birthday. But it's not relevant to this Halloween story that I want to tell. So,
but you can dance is the point.
No, I can't. I'm terrible. I basically just spaz around.
You should be waltzing.
Yeah, I agree. So
I bet he'd be good at that.
We go to this.
I bet he can only dance to Devo. That's what I think about Chris.
I waltz to Devo. Yeah.
that would be cool.
Yeah.
So we went to the Echo, I think, and for Halloween, and we're all on the dance floor, and Chloe loves to dance, and so we're dancing. And this actually kind of scared me about myself because I'm not this kind of guy. But this guy kind of got up behind her and she didn't really notice. And he just started kind of
grinding her
a little bit,
his dick into her butt.
And a little bit.
That's what they do out there.
And he reached down and started like, he went to like rub his hand like up her side and up her ass. And I just, I fucking just grabbed his arm and I was like, whoa.
You aren't
seats
scared?
Taken.
Well, what? I guess you have to do that, though.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't, taken. But it wasn't. And the thing that scared me about it was that it didn't even, there was never a thought. It was impulse and reaction. Like, I never even stopped to think, you know, I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know if he's crazy or if he knows how to fight or if he has a fucking knife in it. Like, I just fucking grabbed his arm and I got super, like, alpha, which I don't do to people like
on
that way.
On the dance floor, no.
Yeah, right on the... And then we had a dance-off. No.
And someone then, tied your hands together.
And then I said something like, whoa, easy. Like, I got really... If I had been a werewolf, my eyes would have turned red.
Yeah.
And then I would have growled and like an animal. And he thankfully looked at me and was like, oh, is this your girlfriend? And I go, yeah. And he was like, sorry. And then he went away.
He's like, sorry, you should check on the vibe she's putting out. She's putting out some vibes.
She totally could have gone in such a bad direction.
Not me.
I want to know, like, did Chloe let, how far did she let it go, though?
She didn't, because he wasn't touching her yet.
Right.
The first contact, because it was like that kind of thing where a girl's dancing and a guy just starts kind of moving up and it's crowded. And so you're a little forgiving because you're like, well, there's no room, so everyone's going to be kind of bumping into each other.
No, I know.
It was the moment that he took his hand and tried to run it up the side of her body that I just was like, no. That freaked me out about myself because...
Because you love somebody? So
Chloe's
much.
Pretty hot.
Shut up, Jonah!
You got to monitor her on that dance floor, man.
Yeah, check out the vibes, bro.
No, that happens. Like, but guys think that it's like a free for all there, and mm-hmm. it's just this
they really
place.
Do. And but it was that moment of not being in control of, because it very could have like I could have easily just have gone pop and then like, oh no, why would I do that?
Have you ever been in a fight like that?
I've never been in a fist fight.
You've never hit some guy?
No, of course not. I'm
what
not.
Do you mean,
I don't
of course
fight.
Not.
I'm not a fighting person. I don't fight.
I've choked and thrown a guy against a wall once.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that? What happened?
What?
What did he do?
He died. No.
No. What did he do to you to warrant that in response?
I got upset because we were waiting in line for the bathroom at a bar, and
damn,
he cut in line
like
with a girl.
Life.
Yes, he cut in line with a girl. And went into this one person bathroom that I had been, you know, there was a whole line. And I was like, whoa, buddy. And then like he closed the door and then he comes back out and like pushes up against me in this hallway, screaming in my face. He's like, you want to piss me off? You want to fucking piss me off? And I was like, dude, I just need to pee. He's like, fuck you. And then I just like said, no, fuck you. And I grabbed his throat. It was the first time I ever felt big in my entire life. Like I could actually do something. I never know my size. And like,
again with
every
you!
Time.
Again with you!
That was rude.
Yeah.
Again! I'm gonna get a picture of you flipping me off. I'm gonna get a picture of you rubbing your ass on the thing and I'm gonna sell it to TMZ.
Joel McHale. He'd love it. So anyway, like he pushed me, so I grab his throat and then I just like shoved him into a wall, and his head hit back, and he like crumbled into the ground.
That's pretty
and then
rad.
For a second, were you like, "I've just killed this man"?
I did. For a second, I was like, "Oh shit!" Like I didn't want to do that, but like I was literally up.
But you were protecting yourself.
Yeah, and you know, you don't fight. No cuts.
I would be lying if I were to say I would be lying. That should be the name of your album. Yeah. I would be lying I were to say that, you know, that the little kid in me who was Natasha's height until sophomore year of high school, maybe junior year.
Really?
And got, you know, got.
Oh, because your mom's tiny.
She's tiny. My dad's 6'1". My mom's 4'11".
Okay.
And so, but having that experience of always feeling kind of helpless. It just physically, you know, if someone sort of those are gratifying. It's hard for me not to be gratified by a fucking bully getting knocked on his ass.
Yeah.
I guess for anyone, really.
Yeah. I think women don't really want to fight. But I think as a man, you kind of feel like pressure.
I just didn't know what else to do. You know, like.
Isn't that famously why people become comedians, though? Because they want to, like, fight for themselves, but they don't want to do it physically.
Well, when I was a kid, that's all.
Out with their
that's all yeah. I had. That's all I had was,
right.
like.
That seems like every comic I yeah, know. Yeah. And that's why you say comics are nerds, but I think most comics who do the kind of comedy I like are usually, like, really good at that. There's also, like, bro comedy that's, like, more like a,
laugh
I'm
going
to go out there and slaughter.
That's Laugh Factory. You've just described the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, like, it's
the Laugh
like,
Factory is bro comedy.
Up. Yeah, it's, like, people who are just, like, they're there to, like, destroy in the same way, like, a sports event would.
This town is a pussy waiting to get fucked.
Yeah.
Like, it's Scarface comedy.
Scarface comedy, yeah. Which is, I think, on Monday nights at the
Improv. Come on! And they just go out their jokes with a fucking machine going, come on!
Destroy. And then you got to follow that, and it's fun. Yeah, but I think that the kind of comedy I am attracted to is more like, you know, it's smart, and it's people who can lash out with their tongue, you know.
Yes.
In a real...
You like a lashing tongue?
Hot way.
But you work a ton now. You work a bunch now.
I work a bunch?
You do?
Of course, but I mean, what are you talking about specifically?
I'm talking about like the idea that
I'm a big hit, Chris. The idea that what?
When was it last time? That come out last year?
My album?
Yeah, it was your second one, right?
That was my first album.
It was your first album?
Coke Money. I was listening to this interest. How many albums do you guys have?
Two, I have two EPs.
Two?
Yeah.
How about you?
One.
Well, here's what I was listening. Well, who's talking about this? Something like maybe a Fleetwood Mac special or something on some music, and they were saying like. Your first album, I didn't realize this, with music, it's 10 years of work.
With anything.
That's what's so interesting. And so it's like you can really tell how good someone is from their second album because that's usually like 1.5 or 1 year of work.
Well,
they got a sophomore slump is what they call that.
Right.
It's like, you know, you have your whole life to write your first album. You have a year or so to write your second.
Yeah, so it's like that. I was thinking about, I think it was like a documentary I was watching on like folk artists, you know, like James Taylor. It's like that first one is like so amazing. And then, so yeah, so it is hard to keep it coming.
Well, also, as an artist, you're kind of, not to sound too gushy about it, but as an artist, you're essentially a product of your environment, and you have a certain lens through which you express the things that happen to you. And so if your first album is a huge hit, all of a sudden you have a lot of success very fast, and you have a lot of things that your environment is not what it was before.
Yeah.
And so... You know, you don't have as much time, I assume, or you don't
you're
have as much struggle. You're not taking the bus anymore. And so it's just that everything just changes. Like your environment changes and everything changes and that sort of hunger maybe changes a little bit. And so I think that could potentially be an issue.
As my acting teacher said, change is the only proof of life.
Oh my God, he's right. She's right.
It was a woman,
the teacher is right.
But change.
Beautiful.
I just when I heard teacher, when I heard teacher, I thought, man, I just because
I don't. What is that? So what are you doing now that you're excited about?
Well, I need a job. No,
Are you coming back?
I'm
are you in the third season of Burning Love?
I'm in the third season of Burning Love. The first season's premiering on E! On Friday, I think.
Cool. Yeah. It's such a good show.
It's great.
Real
it's
good.
The only, like, I know it's going to be on TV now as a show.
It's real funny.
Yeah, but I've never really, like, it's the first, like, web internet show where, like, me and my friends talk about it like it's a show. You see that show, Burning Love? It's a, yeah, it's,
there
it's
was
a great
another,
show.
There was another web show like that, which was the Sklar's web series was funny like that to me. Back on Tops.
Oh, Back on Tops. Yeah, that was a great show.
Back on Tops was pretty fucking funny, too.
Yeah, but
it's cool how they basically that's the new model. They've had 12 10-minute episodes, and they turned it into six. They re-edited it to six 20-minute episodes, and then so now it's a hit on the internet. Now it's going to be on television,
and especially that
in their format and in the television
and
format.
that type of reality satire format is so easy to manipulate the length of it because it's they can just these could fit together anyway because it's basically just one long arc is the series of a reality show.
Yeah.
So you could chop that up. You could make them 5 minutes or 10 or 15 or 20. It's pretty fun.
And
it's
Natasha's
pretty cool.
Great in the first season. You're so good.
I play, I reprise my role that I always play of the girl with no pants.
Yeah.
I am really looking forward to making the transition into playing hookers to madams. I think that's going to happen. As long as men
a lot of hookers are saying the same thing too. One day,
who said that?
No, just a lot of hookers are going to be saying that too. One day, I'll have my own shanty.
But yeah, I've been doing. You know, I'm going to be in Arrested Development. I've got a little part in that, and Community. I just did a thing on, and you know, just doing some stuff. Got my own show I'm working on for IFC.
Nice.
And then
I'm touring, so you can look at my website.
Natasha Leggero.
And then Coke Money. Good album.
Oh yeah, Coke Money. That's good. Took me 10 years. Let's see what comes next.
Are you working
on
the next?
Let's see how good Double Diamonds is gonna be.
Yeah,
are you working on the next
one already?
That's what I call
it.
What was the line you said?
Lobster shortage.
Last week. Like something about the crafty.
I said there's no lobster thermidor at Crafty. Lobster thermidor.
I love that.
I don't even know what that is.
Just sounds like the most fancy lobster. You know, plate you can get.
I always loved. I loved your bit about what happened. Well, what happened is I was calling to see.
That was my first bit. That was I think that the first time I performed.
I remember that bit.
Well, I'm gonna try to work on another special. I am, but it's really hard.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah. I mean, I've been on the road when I'm not. I just came off the road because I'm working on Saturdays and Sundays now. But when I'm done, I'm going back on the road, and I think I.
Oh, you have your BBC show.
The BBC show and then the AMC show. So the one's on Saturday and one's on Sundays. And so, but as soon as those are done.
Because he does not like to rest at all.
Don't like it.
I'm really going to start trying to take a Sabbath. That's my new thing. Well, there's this new thing like a technology. It's Shabbat. I'm not Jewish, but it's like on a Saturday. Or you could do it on a Sunday too. But you take you turn your phone off. And from like sundown Friday.
So I don't understand. So you just like.
It's 24-hour period with no cell phone.
So like,
no
you turn your Wi-Fi off? So you're just getting data connection?
Well, I can't even go to a store?
You're not supposed to go to a store. I mean, I think you do it you do what would be challenging to you. For me, turning off my phone, I would let myself watch movies because that inspires me.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't email for 24 hours and, just light candles and drink wine and
that all
read.
Sounds great.
No emails.
I used to light a lot of candles and drink
Why
wine
not?
When my power gets shut
because
up.
Then on Sunday I'll have twice as much fucking work to do.
That's a good
it's
point.
It's never going to stop, Chris.
You get an assistant who's going to check your emails.
I have an assistant.
Well, of course, but I'm saying you get them to help that, facilitate
but then,
it.
But then,
I just think you need to rest your mind. Like, I'm so into my phone right now and it's like driving me insane.
I'm constantly
need to take a break from it.
Well, it's just that there are answers that only I have because people work for me, and so if they say what do you need to do about this, it fucks them up if I don't answer as quickly as possible because they're like, we can't do anything until you tell us what to do, and so I can't.
Remember when we used to make fun of Seacrest for what you're doing now?
I'm not doing same thing.
Wouldn't you like to lay in bed with that little Chloe from Friday, watch some TV? Relax, don't check emails, and from Friday at like 6, and then Saturday at 6, whatever the assistant can't take care of. I just feel like, how are we going to get inspired if we're constantly walking around returning emails in traffic?
Emails are really inspiring, Natasha. They're so inspiring to hear the, oh, another one, another opportunity.
At replies, Instagram, Vine.
Yes.
What are all these things?
Oh, I have to give a quick status update and make a 6-second video, and then we'll be good to go.
I like that girl's cape. I like being able to look at the people passing
cavalcade of almost stars.
I just think that in order I should come back and tell you once I've tried this because I don't really know if it's gonna work, but I really think that it could help because it's comedy's about input and output, it's like you need to be taking in, I mean you take in life on the internet, but I just feel like It's so distracting. It's sure. so like it does something different to your mind yeah. than if you were just gonna lay around and like watch a movie and read and drink some coffee and then like and then the movie you watched reminded you of something and then you think about that more and then you read this quote and then you come up with this idea for an article you want to write. Like, how can you do that when you're like?
I get stressed when I just sit around.
You do?
Yeah, I have trouble doing it. I just
like, you know,
love it.
You're not just sitting. It's not like you're just sitting there staring at a wall. I mean, you fill your time up with stuff. Like,
I smoke in a hammock. That's what my thing is.
On Saturdays, like sometimes I'll just leave my phone at home and then like go and like run errands and or like go record shopping. You know?
Don't you feel better when it's not on you sometimes? Like, it's if you great. Know, like especially on the week, like you work on the weekend, so I'm not really sure what you're supposed to do, but I just think that. When you don't take it on a hike, and yeah. you're there for, like, when I go on vacation, I love it because mm-hmm. I'm not checking. Like, I just went to Ojai to write with someone, and, you know, I was, like, taking, you know, I didn't have the phone on, and I got so much more done.
Yeah, it's almost kind of a relief when you get someplace and there's no service, and you kind of go, oh, well, then that's it.
That's the future. That's going to be the new 60s, is, like, going out places where there's no technology.
Yeah. When you
that's going to be like the thing that people are like attracted to.
Yeah. When you and Ricky went to Buenos Aires?
Uh-huh.
Did you have a international plan or were you just off your phones?
We were off our phones.
Yeah.
We were also drunk though. So.
Yeah. There was Instagrams when you probably guys got back to Wi-Fi, huh?
Yeah. No, it was and we were on email, but yeah, we were off of that.
Yeah. That seemed like a fun trip.
It was really fun. Yeah, we went to Uruguay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I remember I saw her at the Comedy Death Ray pageant show. She was like, we're just going to go down to.
Well, that's the beauty of not having children. You're like, oh, it's Christmas. Let's go to Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
Where is it warm? We just looked at a globe. We're like, okay, well, the equator's there. So we should go somewhere past that. And so then we just like picked this place. But it ended up being like really fun. We stayed in this like amazing like I don't know what it was, like a farm or something in Uruguay. It was so beautiful, like just like it's really hard to explain.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of fun.
But it was like like we both like nice hotels, so we stayed at like these real like this really nice hotel where there was like maybe five people to each person staying there. Like I opened up my menu at the restaurant, and this person comes with a flashlight like over me so that I can see.
Jeez. What?
You guys are going to think I'm...
No, was it like an empty...
It wasn't even that expensive. It was just you're in Uruguay.
Yeah.
It's not expensive to a couple of millionaires like Natasha.
Come on. But at one point, I remember we were in the spa, and Ricky's like, I need another robe. My robe's wet. And I was like, well, just ask him. And she's like, can I have another robe? And the woman comes back. She's like, of course. And she comes back, and she's like, on a tray. She has two robes, and she says... Is two mediums okay?
No, and she flips the tray. Get out of here. Small, what do we look like?
But it was very relaxing, and I do feel like it was inspiring. You know, like it's nice to kind of shut your mind off mm-hmm. from that. You do that. Come on. You go on vacation, Chris.
The drives, when you guys drive.
Well.
When you go to the bathroom, you don't check your email, right?
Oh, yeah, you do.
God damn it.
What else are you going to do during that boring pee? Ugh. When is this going to be over?
I mean, you're definitely a product of now. So maybe
I've been, you know, I took a vacation. I took two vacations last year in May. We drove across country. And then between Christmas and New Year's, went to Portland.
Did you do a show in Portland?
You don't like going internationally?
I do. Well, we're probably going to go to Scotland in May this year.
I need to get out of the country like twice a year.
I've never really been.
Really?
I've been to Mexico and Canada.
And you're from Hawaii.
I'm from Hawaii. There was the one time I was going to go to Japan. Me and my friend were saving up. We just were working like two jobs each and we're saving up to go. And then something happened in his family and like he couldn't go anymore. And then we were going to get a package deal. It was like a couple's package, but it was just going to be me and my buddy. And I couldn't afford a flight on my own. And then that
were
was
you
like,
taking that wife of yours for her honeymoon?
We're going to go to Paris.
Ooh, that's nice.
And then we're going to catch the train into London, rent a car, drive up to Scotland.
Ooh, I love it.
I've done that drive.
Yeah.
It's fucking great. It is, but what will freak you out is that you have to remember that you're driving on the other side of the road on the other side of the car.
What? Never mind.
And so,
trip is off.
So, I remember this was in,
Oh, when I was dating Jacinda, because she loved going to, like, we went to Costa Rica and all these. She would just, we'd go someplace with a guidebook, and we would land, we'd you know, get a room somewhere for the first night that we were in a city, and then just have a guidebook and then just drive. And
I like that. That's
it always
cool.
freaked yeah, me out because I was idea. Never fully comfortable
with it. You want an itinerary.
I want an itinerary.
You want a translator.
And so, you know, they were, in retrospect, they were really fun. But I remember the time kind of being like, I don't know. Where are we going to go?
Yeah.
But so driving up through Scotland, and what happens is you kind of zone out in the car, and then all of a sudden you'll see a truck come over the way, and you're like, he's going to hit me. And you're like, I'm on the other side of the road. Like, you forget because you're so used to. Yeah.
And then you see a bunch of sheep just sleeping in the.
I do not recommend renting a car in London, and because we did that where it's like we rented a car right in the heart of London, and it's
more expensive.
No, it's not that it's more expensive. It's just fucking crazy. Like,
it'll
imagine
take you like 3 hours.
Learning not only that, but learning how to flip everything. In a very busy city.
Oh, you want to be doing that like in...
You really don't want to do that in... Yes.
So I go to Manchester then.
So I... Sure. So I don't know what accent that was.
What was it?
I don't know.
Isn't it crazy that England is like... It takes like, what, 5 hours to drive across the whole country? Or 4 hours or something? It's like
it's not
pretty
big.
Amazing that it's like such a... It has such an you know, a strong effect on
the entire world.
The world. Yeah.
So you're
like,
going to take the channel?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that'll be really fun.
We've also
I've
been
got
to Jamaica.
Some great recommendations for food in Paris.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Please
like
let
the
me know.
Best food you've ever had in your life.
Baguettes?
Really? Too many carbs.
I'm
not going to have any bread or cheese.
I basically,
what can you recommend?
I had the same version. I mean, I had a different version of the same thing all through like Switzerland and Italy and Paris and London, which was a version of a ham and cheese sandwich. And in Italy, it was a panini. And then in France, it was a baguette or a crepe. Yeah. But it was basically just a version of ham and cheese, like, you know, jambon fromage or you know, or
you went there as like a student traveler?
No, I went there, I don't know, I was there in 05 or 07.
And
or
you
something.
Just walked around and ate baguettes?
Yeah.
You didn't want to go to like all the nice restaurants?
Well, you went to some.
Oh, okay.
But during the day, you know, like, and by the way, these are really nice. You know, like
really nice baguettes.
Yeah, they were like homemade, like where they fucking make them that day. French bread.
No, I know, yeah. I know. I mean, everything there is just amazing.
Yeah.
Love
in the metro,
it.
You'll get on J'adore. The metro.
Looking forward to it.
And you'll play Berlin's Writing on the Metro. It's really.
And then
fun.
You'll wait in line to get into a museum for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Lines. That's the one bummer.
Yeah. Maybe not. I did, like, we thought about flying into Paris and then just maybe just driving.
Just go to Vegas.
To like,
and go to
I got
Paris.
It all there, Chris.
Every culture, every microculture in one place.
Ugh, Vegas. Depression.
Yeah. So, Natasha Leggero on Twitter. I feel like I'm not getting to hang out as much lately with my friends that I always liked hanging out with, unless they come on the podcast, and that's pathetic.
Hey, why do you think I was making people lasagnas? Although I have to, now that I'm thinking about it, you were our first guest.
Really?
You were the first person we thought of.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm sorry it took so long to have you on our show.
Oh, it's all right.
But we'll have to.
Are you
gonna
take me out for spaghetti now?
Yeah, we'll get spaghetti. Spaghetti. We'll get some spaghetti. We'll get some red sauce for you, Jonah. You won't have to eat any meat or anything.
Thank you.
I'm excited about your BBC show.
It's fun.
Yeah, did two episodes.
Mostly because I'm going to be on it.
Yeah, yes. But you're going to do stand up on the show, right?
That is what they asked me to do. Yeah,
that's what I asked for you to do.
Yeah.
The stand up's great because the room's tight, and so the audience, as opposed to a typical talk show, like the audience is as far as you are from me, and so you're in the crowd basically, and it's
they're really jazzed,
and it's a small crowd of people, but it's super tight, and so
it's shot well.
Yeah, Kinane just did it, and Matt Kirshen, and they did great, and so you're going to be on, and Bamford's going to be on, and Ron Funches is going to be on. Like it's really fun to get to help put some stand up back on television when there's not a lot of stand up on television.
Yeah, especially in an environment that's kind of made for stand up, because I feel like on a lot of late night talk shows, it's you know. Everything's going against you, and you've got to like.
It's a fucking steeplechase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to try to overcome so much.
Well, Natasha Leggero, you
really
have overcome a lot.
I know I have, you guys. I hope I've connected with the public.
She put on her sunglasses while saying that. So I just want to.
And then pulled the coat up over the shoulders at the same time.
I'm trying to connect.
Natasha Leggero, it's lovely to see you. And
congrats.
Thank you so much. You too. And I will. I'll see you when you do the BBC show. And to everyone else, enjoy a burrito. About it. Enjoy a burrito.
What is that? A mumble brag? What's he doing?
A mumble brag.
Did he just talk about a burrito?
Yep. That's the thing. I can buy as many burritos as I want. Oh, mumble brag.
Wait, what's the burrito?
It's just something we say.
An old story.
It's just something we say at the end of a podcast.
Oh, okay. Are those your good lefties?
So the woman who works at Starbucks went to Mardi Gras and she gave this to me
because
she's a Walking Dead fan. So she was like, I brought you these back from Mardi Gras.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Hey, listeners, it's Will Arnett. Our podcast, Smartless, has crossed a milestone that seemed unfathomable when we started nearly 4 years ago, as we've just released our 200th episode. Join us as we welcome the dynamic duo of hilarity, Steve Martin and Martin Short. You've seen them on screen together in The Three Amigos, Father of the Bride 1 and 2, and most recently, and only Murders in the Building. Both are comedic geniuses in their own right, but together they are always electric. And this episode of Smartless is no exception. I don't know if I've laughed more in a single episode than this one. We discuss their career arcs both separately and as a comedy team, how they met, who is more difficult to work with, and what motivates them today. Is Steve a better banjo player than Marty as a singer? Find out on this bicentennial episode of Smartless. Follow Smartless in the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you get to hear Sean cry. What a loser!